This is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Wednesday, February 24th, 2021. Taylor, we're almost at the end of February. Holy crow. Taylor Schwenk is producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut. I'm Buster Olney, working from my home studio just north of New York City. So the teams are rolling. Everyone's having Zoom calls every day. Players are working out. And there are still a number of unsigned free agents. How about this one? Scott Kazmir has agreed to terms with the San Francisco Giants on a minor league deal. He has not pitched in the big league since 2016. He's 37 years old. I reported this yesterday, and what I heard was is that in his bullpen sessions, his fastball velocity was clocked up to 92, 93 miles per hour. And if you look at Kazmir's career, typically you see him pitch better when he gets his velocity up. That's always been the key barometer for him is fastball velocity. I love this from Tim Anderson. The White Sox shortstop met with Tony La Russa after a one-on-one meeting. As you know, a lot of people have criticized the White Sox for the hiring of La Russa. Tim Anderson is invested. His quote was, "The drive to want to win, I'm behind him 110%. Gerrit Cole talked about Major League Baseball service time manipulation yesterday. He talked about how it's just not productive. It'll be interesting to see if he and other players get more outspoken about non-competitive behavior, something we're going to talk about with Paul Embiidkes coming up. Trevor Story spoke with reporters yesterday. Here's what he had to say.
It's a little weird without David, without Knowles, without Dez, Tony, a lot of guys that have been regulars here for a long time since I've been here. And it's going to take some getting used to for sure, but you know, I think it opens up a lot of opportunities for some young guys, and I think they're ready to step into that challenge. People are counting.
George Springer was in Jay's camp, and he spoke to the reporters on Tuesday.
Only known one thing for pretty much my whole life. I've only known the stuff in Houston. You know, I love those guys, but you know, I'm here now, and you know, it's a new opportunity. Opportunity for me. I'm enjoying this. This has been fun. It's only been 3-4 days, but to be out here and you know, we're really kind of enjoy being around guys who I know already and have actually played with, and then just to meet guys, you know, to kind of walk around the complex to see what it's all about is it's fun for me.
The Detroit Tigers agreed to a minor league deal with right-hander Julio Teheran. That, of course, includes an invitation to Major League Spring Training. Teheran went 76-72 with a 3.64 ERA in his time with the Atlanta Braves. Taijuan Walker spoke to the reporters yesterday, and he told them that, you know what, he's not going to go with number 00 because Mr. Met has that. Taijuan Walker is going to go with 99. Before we get to Tom McCarthy, the play-by-play man for the Philadelphia Phillies television side, to continue our National League East preview before we get to David Schoenfield and Hembo, check out Stephen A's World, streaming weekdays on ESPN+. You can also find the best interviews from Stephen A's World available as a podcast every Wednesday. Listen wherever you get your podcasts and watch Stephen A's World on ESPN+.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes. The clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit directtv.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by.
Welcome to the show!
Welcome to the show!
Welcome to the show, mate!
Welcome to the show!
Whoa! Welcome to the show, baby.
You're in the show with David Schoenfeld.
David Schoenfeld covers baseball for ESPN. And it's been interesting, Dave. You know, this week we're getting all these new production pieces for all of our regular guests rolled out by Taylor. And that one, Taylor, you adopted like 90% of what Josh Macri did, and then you kind of changed it a little bit at the end. What was your thinking there? And Dave, what do you think of it?
I didn't even listen to that. I assumed it was the same. So what? You changed my little song without my approval?
Taylor, play it again. Taylor, play it again.
Welcome to the show!
Welcome to the show.
Welcome to the show, mate.
Welcome to the show.
Whoa!
Welcome to the show.
You're in the show with David Schoenfeld.
Did you hear that? The last part.
Okay, I got it. I mean, Taylor, you got to run this stuff by the talent. Come on.
I know. You know what? So I've been taking credit for our legendary image guy, Tim Thomas's work, and now I'm going to throw it back at him. This is all his fault. Not my problem. I'll confer with him and see if we can get this straightened out.
No, I like it. I mean, I'm pumped up. I've only shoveled my driveway 8 times in February. So, I like the little extra enthusiasm there.
I did too. Yeah, no, it's fun. And plus, on top of that, I love Dave's Open anyway. So you can, we don't need to double back on that one. We'll go with that one for 2021. All right. So you have a piece up on ESPN.com. about the best and worst. Nope, that's not what you wrote. Your favorite and least favorite off-season works by respective teams. And your number one in terms of a team that you are not wild about in terms of what they did during the course of this off-season, the New York Yankees.
Yeah, I mean, the Rockies clearly are, would be number one, with the Arenado trade.
Oh, but not doing anything and dumping their best player while making a bad trade.
They didn't sign one major league free agent, but their owner says they're competitive anyways. But yeah, the Yankees, best and worst isn't quite the right label. It's more, like you said, least favorite. And I didn't, their offseason was fine. I understand Corey Kluber, Jameson Taillon, they were really good in 2018. There's just a lot of risk there for a big market Yankee franchise that hasn't been to the World Series since 2009. Why are you rolling the dice on risky players? Maybe one of them. I can see going after Kluber or Taillon, but then why didn't you sign JT Realmuto? Why didn't you sign Trevor Bauer? You're the New York Yankees. You haven't won since 2009. You're trying to stay below the luxury tax. Come on, Yankees. You're supposed to win.
And I've asked the Yankees people that because I heard that very same sentiment from folks with other teams because they're like, this is the window for this group of players, for the Aaron Judge and Gleyber Torres. Why wouldn't you be the team to go and get this guy? And you're right in signing citing their effort to stay below the $210 million competitive tax level. That clearly has been a driving force. Folks with other teams are saying there's just so much injury risk in that rotation. Yankees people feel like, you know what? They understand why there's that perception, but they do feel like the Taillon now, coming into his second year since Tommy John surgery, they feel like he's poised for a breakout. Same thing with Corey Kluber. But as I wrote, that's what we heard about James Paxton, too.
Right.
That James Paxton was going to be a guy. So I think a lot of people in baseball share your sentiment about the Yankees and why they didn't do more.
I mean, I think, you take Gerrit Cole out of the rotation and, due to the combination of COVID and all the injuries, the rest of they have a lot of candidates there, especially when Severino comes back. But the rest of that group threw like 70-something innings last year. I think Jordan Montgomery threw 44, and he's the number two guy. And I know they're going on depth. They're going to end up using 8, 9, 10 starters, most likely. And it could work out, no doubt. Just a lot of risk in that rotation.
Yeah, Domingo Germán, who knows?
Yeah, who knows?
He's going to be with everything going on with him. I need your help here. You've heard of the phrase dog days of August, which is that particular time in the season that we all recognize. You and I have to come up with a name for these first days of spring training before the exhibition season start because, players are in camp, but they're just going through regular workouts at live batting practice. Generally speaking, for those involved, they're kind of bored. You know, yesterday I talked to a general manager and asked him, hey, who looks good? Who doesn't look good? He goes, I don't know. I don't go down on the field until exhibition. Yeah, no one's in horrendous shape or fine. And so this is a time in spring training, this little window when you see writers sort of find off the wall stories and really focus on that. Like, for example, one year in Mets camp, it was about Yoenis Cespedes and his different rides in the ballpark, the different cars that he had. And then he brought in his horses. And I can remember after about 4 or 5 days of that, Terry Collins looked at me and I'm going to clean up exactly what he said. He said, yeah, it's time to get over this blank. Yeah. But there's this little period, and I was laughing about it yesterday because it was, you know, kind of a fun story about Taiwan Walker is going to go with number 99 instead of 00 because of Mr. Met. What'd you make of that?
Yeah, boy, I don't know how that makes a player feel when he's below Mr. Met on the pecking order for uniform number selection. So I feel a little bit there for Taiwan Walker. But yeah, these first 10, 11 days of spring training, they are a slow grind. At least a lot of the beat writers don't actually have to be there in person, you know, to watch pitcher fielding practice and, you know, players jogging, you know, to get into shape and what have you. But yeah, very slow time of the season.
And this was a question I actually asked yesterday of a source that I talked to. It's why is Aaron Judge's teeth trending? Like yesterday, all of a sudden I see all these references to his teeth. And it turned out that, you know, he has that gap in his teeth and he closed it. And in speaking with the reporters yesterday, he's got a whole new grill.
Well, you know, he can probably afford it, I guess. But yeah, that was kind of his signature look, right? You know, he had the little gap there. I didn't have, you know, I don't think he had any problem. Nobody was calling him unattractive because of that gap. But, you know, hey, if he's more confident off the field, maybe he's more confident on the field.
And it reminded me of a story once, an exchange I had with him. This was the first year he had kind of a breakout season. He was the biggest star in baseball, and everyone wanted to talk to him. And we had the Yankees on a Sunday night game, and he hit a home run like in the seventh inning to turn the score from like 10-1 to 11-1. And I asked the production crew, okay, who are we going to do with the post-game on-the-field interview? And they got back from SportsCenter, we want Judge, right? Any chance to talk to Aaron Judge. So I intercept him coming off the field after the game. He kind of looked at me, goes, I didn't really do anything. And he was right. You know, his home run was sort of after the fact. I said, look, Aaron, you're like the biggest star in baseball right now. So they want to have you. And I always like dealing with him. And he looked at me, goes, okay. And then he paused and he smiled. And he goes, I got anything in my teeth? Before we started the interview, maybe he was thinking about that gap in his teeth. So
yeah, boy, what a rookie year he had. Look, you know, I was thinking about a potential article on later this year, spring, on who are the most interesting people in baseball this year. And no doubt Fernando Tatis Jr. is going to be number one, right? He's so great. He's got the contract. But Aaron Judge, he hasn't been able to stay healthy, but when he's played, you know, per game, he's been one of the best players in baseball. Great fielder, you know, gets on base, power. Man, let's just hope he gets 150 games in this year.
Yeah, he was asked by reporters yesterday about whether or not there have been negotiations between he and the Yankees. And he said no. And you could see that from both sides. Like, if I'm the Yankees, I want to see if he can stay on the field and stay healthy.
Yeah.
And there is an open question about, you know, if you're that big, if you're 6'7", 282 pounds, is it going to be an issue, you know, holding up during the course of your contract? And from Aaron Judge's perspective, you want to negotiate after a year of 150 plus games where you're putting up huge numbers.
Right. Yeah. No need for him to sign now. Right. I don't think there's ever been a regular in baseball history his size, right? I mean, Winfield was close. Frank Howard, maybe. You know, former basketball player at Ohio State, you know, great slugger in the 60s and early 70s, probably like the biggest, you know, good regular, you know. So, yeah, there's not really a history to compare Judge to as far as somebody being that big and whether he can stay healthy.
I think the Elias Sports Bureau in his rookie season, actually, we got a note saying he's the biggest position player in the history of baseball.
Yeah.
They actually, I don't know how they determined that, but that's the note that we got. you know, as someone who has always followed the Mariners, that earlier this week, Kevin Mathers said a lot of stupid stuff. He wound up having to resign on Monday. And one of the things that he talked about was effectively acknowledged service time manipulation with young players. And I got to thinking about it yesterday after hearing how Jerry Dipoto, the general manager, Scott Service, their manager, tried to distance themselves from what Kevin Mathers said. They're trying to do damage control. But when push comes to shove and they put together a team this year, I think there's going to be a lot of pressure on the Mariners to open the season with Jarred Kelenic, a great outfield prospect they got in the Robinson Cano, Edwin Diaz trade with the Mets. Normally, I think the Mariners could hide behind, well, we didn't have baseball in 2020 and we want minor league reps.
Right.
After what was said the other day, what do you think?
Yeah, no doubt. Tons of pressure. They really don't have a left fielder, so there's nobody major league worthy blocking him on the roster. They could also hide, you know, he's only played 21 games above Class A, so they have that excuse to go to, too. But by all accounts, this kid's pretty much ready. You know, again, I know all these reports from the alternate sites last year were raving about every player in baseball, but I know the Mariner writers were saying this kid looked fantastic in camp last year. He's very, very confident player. You know, I talked to him at the Futures game a couple years ago. He said he was ready then to play in the major leagues. But you're right. The pressure is going to be there to put him on the opening day roster. And, you know, thinking long term, you know, the Padres did that 2 years ago with Tatis. I know there are 340 other reasons he signed with San Diego, but it had to have helped that relationship that they put him on the opening day roster in 2019. And I think the Mariners have to think about what this means for the long-term relationship with their young stud.
Not only with him, but I think it would be a gesture of good faith with all the other players.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
We're not going to worry about it because the other players see it too.
Right.
You know, other players. I can remember, I want to say it was the spring training when Jason Hayward was breaking car windows. And I remember talking with Chipper Jones about Jason Hayward and Freddie Freeman. And I just asked him, do you think they'll start the year with that, you know, those guys in the big leagues? He looked at me, goes, we should. They're two of our best players. And I think if you're in Mariners camp and you're a player and you're watching Kelenic running around, you're probably thinking that guy's a major leaguer right now.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see what they do. Dave, always great to talk with you. And don't worry, we'll have the same intro for you next week.
I love it. All right. Thanks, Buster.
Jumping into the numbers. This is Himbo Knows on Baseball Tonight.
So we just keep on having all this cool new production. Himbo, how do you like yours?
Wow. So I do miss the millions of pieces of data in the blank of an eye, but this is much more professional. Like, this is me graduating on. Like, this is, you know, like, obviously that was, I think that was a Josh Macri creation a few years back. And I thought it was nice. It was sort of juvenile, but like, that's who I was then. Buster, I'm now into my 30s. My takes are still as bad as always, but I like to think that I'm still maturing a tad bit. So I like the new open. Very well done, Taylor.
Well, and as you matured, you managed to light social media on fire from time to time. And no more so than the other day when you basically suggested that the contract of Fernando Tatis Jr. was bad for baseball. You were part of this. This was you and our friend Mike Greenberg talking about that.
Fernando Tatis Jr. playing the next 14 years in the country's number 27 media market on the West Coast is an objectively bad thing for baseball. Now, he works with me on Get Up and now here on this show as well. We live in a world where we factor stuff like that into every decision we make. Where are these guys? Where is the, what is the market? How many people are interested in it? And that's our life. Baseball fans, it's probably not your job to care about that because you don't care if this raises the level of interest in baseball or not, raises the ratings. That's not your concern if you're a fan of the sport. But I want you to defend that statement. I know people were attacking you like crazy for saying it. Defend that statement. Why is it objectively a bad thing?
So here's where I'm coming from. Baseball has had the extraordinary good fortune of, for the last 10 years, having Mickey Mantle play center field for the Angels. His name is Mike Trout. And yet I believe that baseball has been unable to properly capitalize on the fact that there is a generational player in our midst. Because, frankly, no one knows who he is. And we have ways to quantify that. A couple of years ago, there was a study done in which his Q score, awareness, was 22. What that means is about one in every five Americans know who he is. Seems impossible. when they measure these things in terms of athlete popularity, he ranks 27th among active athletes and 52nd among all athletes when people are asked the question, who is your favorite athlete? And I am fearful that Fernando Tatis, playing on the West Coast, is going to suffer the same fate.
Okay.
So here's where you're wrong, Hembo, okay?
Here's the difference.
So the other day, Mike Trout was on Zoom, and he was saying, God, I got to get to the playoffs. I know. I hear it all the time. You got to get to the playoffs. Well, Fernando Tatis was in the playoffs last fall, and I think you would agree with me. There's an excellent chance he's going to be in the playoffs this fall and maybe the fall after that, because the Padres are demonstrably a better team than the Angels have ever been during Mike Trout's time with the team.
That's right. That is an important distinction to make. The Padres are as good now, if not better than any time in which Mike Trout has played for the Angels, say maybe his first year, the year they were swept by the Royals in the playoffs. And that is likely to remain the case for the next few years based on the roster that they currently have, based on their sort of spending trajectory. The other difference between Tatis and Trout is that Trout really sort of actively avoids being in the spotlight, whereas it appears to me that Tatis is much more inclined to embrace that. I also think that matters. However, I will stand by my premise, and that is generally that right now there's just sort of a glitch in baseball in which many of our biggest stars are on the West Coast, and it seems obvious that the Padres and Dodgers this season, that's going to be the best rivalry in the sport. And where I'm coming from is there's a huge portion of the country that's just not going to have access to that on a daily basis merely because of time zones, right? That's just how it goes. And I feel strongly, Buster, I feel strongly that Tatis is such a generational player, such a potentially sort of a marketing goldmine. And frankly, I feel like he, unless Major League Baseball goes way out of their way, which they've not done effectively with Trout, I think much of that could be lost with him playing on the West Coast, particularly in San Diego.
Well, you know, I covered a guy who was arguably the best pure hitter in baseball, and that was Tony Gwynn, and he won all those batting titles. Mm. And there's no question, nobody knew who he was.
That's
but
right.
And I would say, right. Yeah, I would say this. I do think Tatis Jr. has a chance to ascend beyond that, and the Padres are going to launch in a way that they never really did under Tony Gwynn.
I'm very hopeful that you're right, but the Padres don't have a tradition of winning the same way that some of these other big market teams on the East Coast or Midwest do. And I am somewhat concerned about the level of sustainability when you consider all these massive contracts that they've given out. Looking beyond this year, Buster, they're on the hook for $432 million in salary through the 2025 season. Only the Yankees have more commitments for the next four seasons. Right now, the Padres, the local television deal, from what I understand, runs through 2031. And everything I've read about it is somewhat uninspiring. So look, if I'm a fan of the San Diego Padres, I am thrilled that my team is investing in this way. This is the best thing that's happened to me as a fan in that town, probably in my entire life. I am, however, somewhat concerned, and I've heard this from other people in baseball, I'm somewhat concerned that this might be a flash in the pan. And we have a sort of a robust history of small to mid-market teams handing out mega contracts only to trade those players down the line. We have Nolan Arenado, Giancarlo Stanton, Robinson Cano, Zach Greinke, Prince Fielder, A-Rod with the Rangers. Like, that's a fairly robust list of teams in a sort of similar position to this one, not being able to sustain it over the long term. That's my fear with the San Diego Padres.
Yeah, and I've heard that from folks with other teams. I would say this, and I wrote about this on Sunday, that I do wonder if Peter Seidler, the owner of the Padres, is the modern-day Mike Ilitch, where his attitude is, I have a lot of money. And I don't mean that he's, like, bragging.
Right. Yeah.
He has money available, and he wants to have a winning baseball team. And for 10 years, I was talking about this with an agent yesterday. For 10 years, the Tigers were so much fun to watch. You know, the Justin Verlander and Miguel Cabrera, and maybe that's what we're going to see out of the Padres with a little bit more success into the postseason. Every spring, we talk about teams that have gotten better, the most dangerous teams. We spent a lot of time this spring talking about the Mets and the San Diego Padres. Give me two candidates among teams for regression.
So I'll give you one in each league. The most obvious one from the National League is the Marlins, who managed to reach the postseason last year despite ranking 24th in run differential. That was the lowest mark of any team that made the 16-team playoff field. Further, the four other teams in the National League East combined to spend about $350 million in free agency. Miami has spent $5 million in major league contracts in free agency. I think there's a good chance they get lapped by the field, if only because, you know, the market that they occupy. And in the American League, that team for me is the Rays. The key figure here is 14-5. Here's why. That was the best record by any team in one-run games last season.
And history says that is a somewhat unsustainable formula. Further, my sort of running theory, Buster, is that teams are going to rely more on starters providing length this season because the schedule is 2.5 times longer than it was last. So even though Tampa elected to trade Blake Snell and not pick up Charlie Morton's option, I really think they are likely to feel that. And they're going to be asking a lot more of their bullpen this year than they did last. And like I said, given the length of the season, that's going to come back to bite them in August and September.
So the next collective bargaining agreement talks from the players' perspective are going to center around non-competitive behavior. And Kevin Mather, who resigned as CEO of the Mariners the other day, sort of underscored that with his comments about service time manipulation. None of that's a secret. Everybody knows that's going on. I just don't hear anybody really come out and say it out loud.
Right.
But I have been collecting a list of, in the eyes of players, what they feel like is non-competitive behavior by teams. What do you got for me?
So I like the list. So you emailed me a list yesterday of some sort of the obvious ones. And one that I think is important to note here, and it's something that we talked about a couple months ago, Buster, is the volume of players that are being non-tendered, right? Those players whose arbitration numbers teams aren't willing to pay, in some cases, multiple years before they hit free agency. There were a record 59 of those in 2020 and a then record 54 of those in 2019. That's a massive group of players. So not only are teams less eager to spend in free agency, which is much less a destination, but they're now identifying their own players with rising numbers in arbitration in a way that they really never did before. So if you're going to put this list together, I think the way that teams are non-tendering players, and in some cases attractive players who aren't even all that expensive by the standards of today's game, I think that's another thing that you could add to your list that, you know, I'm looking forward to your Sunday column and see what else you what else you come up with.
I've gotten a lot. And let me give you one stat. Last winter, you know, because we've always heard free agency is what players strive for. They build up service time. They get to free agency. Last winter, 68% of free agents took a pay cut. And I'm going to talk about that after, you know, after done the podcast. I'm going to send you some notes that I got. All right. So we're going to be talking with Tom McCarthy in a bit for a Phillies preview. Give me a question to give him.
I want you to ask Tom McCarthy if the Phillies bullpen, let's say the Phillies bullpen this year is league average, right? Let's use ERA. Let's say the Phillies bullpen has a league average ERA. How many teams in the National League East are still definitively better than they are? Because to me, that answer is only two. But for you, I think the Phillies are a little bit lower on the pecking order. So that's my question for Tom McCarthy.
Excellent. All right, Hembo, thank you.
Later, boys.
Get out of here, Hembo. Sick of Hembo. Right.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Buster. Just go to Indeed.com/Buster right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Buster. Terms and conditions apply.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
Tom McCarthy is the play-by-play man in the Phillies television broadcast. And Tom, I'm curious, have you gotten word yet on how you guys are going to handle broadcast spring training and in the regular season?
Yeah, Buster, appreciate you having me on. But I think the first thing is spring training. We're going to be in Philadelphia. They just made a conscious decision that they'll tread lightly, at least for the first part of the season, at least for spring training. So that's fine. As long as we have games on, I mean, you know how important it is just to get the product out there. It is different because you don't have the interaction with the players. But this generation of player has been so savvy in, with social media and with you know, video chat and with just texting in general. It's made life a lot easier. But I'm looking forward to the day where we can step down onto the field and say hello to somebody in person.
Yeah, I felt like last year, like we could, because we had been around the players, you'd been around the players in spring training to some degree. But I felt like coming into 2021, like I'm going to need that time. Like I could work off my reserves a little bit last year and doing broadcasts. But this year, I'm hoping that gets loosened up because, as you say, you need that interaction. You need to have those conversations and, you know, not just on those formal Zoom calls that we see.
Yeah, and we've been around for a long time where there's certain guys that we've met when they're on other teams. But there's other guys that will be putting a Phillies uniform on that, quite frankly, I've never met. And that's part of the personal part of being the home broadcaster, is that you get a chance to sort of interact with them and tell some stories about who they are and what got them to where they are. And I think we're trending back toward normalcy more and more. I mean, in society as a whole. And I think we've taken great strides over the last several months, you know, just from doing football and basketball. I see that. So I'm hopeful that the next couple of months, while more people get vaccinated and the virus is tempered a little bit, that we'll have an opportunity to see each other again and just not roam around that press box area the whole time.
Yeah, exactly. Thanks for joining us for this this preview. I really felt like going into the offseason that maybe the most important player to be signed by any team was JT. And the fact that the Phillies brought him back, I thought beyond what he brings on the field, what he represented to the other players, what he represents the fan base. What do you think?
I agree with that. And I think one of the big things, too, is just control the pitching staff. Because in this game, I mean, there are catchers that can handle the pitching staff and some of them can't hit. There's catchers that can handle the pitching staff and hit, but can't control the clubhouse. And he does all of those things. And it's instant credibility for anybody that steps onto the mound and has him behind the plate. I think that's the part that I was most impressed with when the Phillies brought him over, because we saw him from a distance with the Marlins, but he is way better defensive catcher than I ever thought he was. And not only throwing guys out, which is, you know, he's one of the best in the game and has been the last couple of years, but just the controlling of the game itself and the game plan and the want to get better on each passing year. You know, we talk about framing so often. His framing numbers are just through the roof these last couple of years compared to when he was with the Marlins. And obviously that helps steal certain pitches for certain pitchers. But I love watching him behind the plate. I think that's one of the real joys. It's kind of like when we had Carlos Ruiz with the Phillies. I loved watching Carlos behind the plate. It was just there was a certain energy and tempo to him. And I think that's what JT brings. And you know, he's a badass too. I mean, he's not going to take anything from anybody. And I think that's kind of cool to have that.
I'm hitting you cold with this question. But I had an interesting conversation during the offseason with the general manager about JT's preeminence at his particular position. And he goes, it's not very often where someone is that much better than the next closest guy. And the name that I came up with was Mariano Rivera. For years, there was Mariano Rivera, and then, you know, miles and miles behind him were the other relievers. But that's what it seems like it is with JT.
I agree with that. I mean, there are guys that are exceptional behind the plate, and there are guys that are going to be even better as the years move on. But right now, you'd be hard-pressed. I mean, you could find somebody that has the offensive numbers that sort of are close to him. I mean, James McCann, who the Mets signed, if you put their numbers up against each other, there's some similarities in an offensive way, even though I think JT's probably a better catcher offensively. But then you do everything else. It's hard to find, you know, some of the stuff that you can't see that he does that's really important. it was ultra important, and nothing against Andrew Knapp and Rafael Marchand or Jeff Mathis, who the Phillies just signed. There's just something about having that stability in the middle of the lineup, but also behind the plate, that you cannot replicate with anybody else.
Paul Imbakides is one of our researchers at ESPN, and I asked him, he grew up a huge Phillies fan. I asked him, and I mentioned I was going to talk to you, and I said, what question do you want me to ask? And his was, if the Phillies bullpen ERA is league average, okay, just league average, where do the Phillies rank in the National League East? Because he feels like that if they're just average, the bullpen just stabilizes somewhat, that they could be right near the top. He has them as the third best team in the division.
I would agree with that right now. If the bullpen is average, I mean, just think back to last year. If the bullpen was average, they would have been in the postseason. I mean, there's no doubt. They only needed the one win at the end of the season. Now, would they have performed well in the postseason? I don't know, because I mean, things were imploding from a Penn standpoint. I mean, guys that you would normally look at and say, yeah, he's going to be good, they were not good. But I agree with that. I do think that, and I still have some concerns about the starting staff, because there's unproven guys that are in the 3, 4, 5 spots, or maybe the 4 and 5 spots, and some veterans as well. But I think if the bullpen can be even an earned run and a half better than last year, which I think is conceivable, then yes, I do think that they're the third best team, because they have everything else. And I love the Marlins. I think their youth is incredible. I think they're going to be good down the road. I still love the Nationals pitching staff. And even though everybody else seems to be getting, besides Soto and Turner, a tad older in certain spots, they don't have Howie Kendrick back this year. But I do think that. I mean, I feel like they can compete. And I think that this division is just rock solid all the way through. I think it's these first 2 weeks for the Phillies, it's not going to dictate everything, but it's going to be a pretty good litmus test because of the matchups they have.
We had a listener question I want to run past you. This is from Frank at Cinegrades 2. He asked, in honor of the Phillies preview pod, excluding Schilling and Randy Johnson, have you seen a more dominant 1A, 1B in a rotation than Doc Holliday and Cliff Lee? Their 2011 season just proves how difficult winning the title is.
I would agree with the second part of it, that it proves how you have to have a little bit of luck. You know, we go back to 08 and the Phillies World Championship. And if you compare that staff, and it's hard to, but if you compare that staff to the staff with Holliday and with Cliff Lee, there's no comparison. I mean, there just isn't. You'd be hard. I mean, that's sort of a once in a lifetime staff. I go back to the Mets teams that, you know, won the 86 World Championship with Doc, Ron Darling, guys like that. I mean, it's hard to find a 1-2 punch, and it brings up bad memories for the Phillies fans, because they were so good. And it's not that everybody expected that they would win the championship, but when they got knocked out by the Giants and the Cardinals in such great games, I mean, it was stunning. I mean, it was stunning on so many levels. But yeah, you'd be hard pressed to find a 1A and 1B like that.
Among the position players, who's someone that you're kind of locking in on as being a pivotal guy for the lineup?
Well, I think there's a couple of them. I think first and foremost for me, it's Rhys Hoskins. Yeah. And if what he did the last part of the season can sort of get into the first part of this year, because I think that what we saw his first couple of years is more of who he is. But sometimes you get into these ruts, and it's a psychological rut. It's a physical rut. They're hard to get out of. And he worked his tail off to, A, get healthy because of the elbow, but also, B, to try to find his swing again. And I think he is a huge piece to the success rate of the Phillies, because he's going to be in the middle of the lineup. And if he is productive in the middle of that lineup, it alleviates some of the other things. But I also think that Andrew McCutchen in left field, and I know it's the last year of his deal, but he, from what I've been told, is moving around way better than even last year. I think that's a big, big part of the success of the Phillies, because of where he is, A, in the lineup, because he's probably going to lead off, and B, because he's going to have to play every day. There's no DH this time, so he can't get off his feet. At least there's no DH at this point. Can't get off his feet. Yeah, at this point.
It's interesting, and I guess, you know, Bryce is always going to be someone who's going to draw a lot of attention. He has been since he was a teenager. And if you follow response to his play on social media, you'd think that he had 2 terrible years. And I told friends, I've done shows, and I'm like, he's been absolutely fantastic in his time with the Phillies. You see him a lot more than I do. What have you seen?
I think that the chatter about that, Buster, and I'm not trying to sugarcoat anything at all, but I think the chatter is more outside of the city. I think he's been the least of the Phillies' worries.
Yeah.
He's embraced everything. You know, he shows up in spring training this year. He's got a Philly Fanatic bat. He's got a Clear Water t-shirt because of the accent in Philadelphia where water is, instead of W-A-T-E-R, it's W-O-O-D-E-R. You know, he's embraced everything about the city itself. And, you know, I know that it's accentuated because the Nationals won a world championship without him. But to me, he's been the least of the problems. He's been healthy. He busts his rear every single time. When he doesn't run something out, you're like, okay, now there's something wrong. But I don't know. I don't want to sugarcoat it because I think he would tell you that he would like to be even better. But I think he's the least of the Phillies' problems. I really do. And it hasn't been an overwhelming burden financially like people have talked about. They still have been able to sign JT Realmuto. They've still been able to sign Didi Gregorius. You know, could they have leaned on Trevor Bauer or somebody like that? Maybe. But I think that there were probably more. There's more to it than that. I think he's been great. I mean, I love interacting with him. He's been tremendous to all of us. And I think the city, if you ask the fans in Philadelphia, I don't think they would have a bad thing to say about him.
You talked about buying in. We had the Phillies on the Sunday night broadcast last year in Philadelphia playing against Atlanta, and he wore a microphone, and he just kept it on. And he kept talking. See, I'm glad to hear you react that way. I went on radio in Philly the next day, and I was like, this was unbelievable. And then I wrote a piece a few days later, like, I hope everybody in baseball sees how Bryce extended himself in this situation.
I thought it was great. I thought the best part was when he lost the earpiece and then found it an inning or two later. Right. And all of a sudden they just started talking. He goes, guys, I found the earpiece. I thought it was great. I mean, you know, I think you know this better than I do, but from what I understand, he was only supposed to wear it for a couple of innings, but he just had it the whole time. He loves the game. I mean, he does. And, you know, I will tell you that from a distance, my perception of him was different when he was in Washington. Although anytime I asked him a question, he answered it. I'm excited about him being with this organization moving forward. You know, we did a bunch of things together in this offseason where he read to kids on Zoom, which was pretty cool. I thought the microphone there. I thought the best part was when he sheepishly said, like, one of our kids did something wrong. Guys, I found the microphone, because it fell off the warning track at one point.
Right, exactly. He banged into the wall. It fell off. And then he looked around for it and restored it. And the folks in the truck are hearing him. Hey, I got the microphone on. And it was like, I mean, he really did extend himself. And, you know, we'll see where he and the Phillies go this year and what is going to be an incredibly competitive National League East. All right, sir. Well, I appreciate you joining me.
You got it, Buster. Anytime.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster, Bleacher Tweets for Wednesday. First up, we have Max Leibowitz at M_A_Leibowitz 95. He writes in, Buster, if the NL gets the DH for next year, is the relationship such that Albert Pujols could return to St. Louis? I believe there was some tension there after he left for a little bit, no?
I think there was a little bit, you know. I mean, naturally, he wanted to get paid by the Cardinals. They decided they didn't really want to compete with him. But do I think he's going to return to the Cardinals to be a player? No, I don't. We've seen his production drop in recent years. I don't think the Cardinals would sign him to play every day. I would, you know, Max, your question's interesting in this regard. I do wonder if at the end of his career, he'll agree to sign a one-day contract with the Cardinals so he can retire as a Cardinal.
That seems likely. Next up, we got P.K. Steinberg. He writes in, Dombrowski's win-now philosophy is to trade prospects for proven talent, but the Phillies farm system is pretty weak. How's that going to work, do you think?
It's going to be a challenge, P.K. Look, this winter, he basically, when he stepped into that job, he spent a lot of money. JT Realmuto, you know, signing other veterans as well. In talking with a lot of his peers, they really feel like that what Dave does well, maybe better than any other general manager, is convince owners to spend money. Like, they feel like he has a really great way in going to an owner and say, boy, you know, we could really use this reliever. We could really use this starter, and kind of nudge them beyond where they initially intended to go. And that's probably, given the state of the farm systems, you say, is what they're going to have to do the next couple of years.
Last one for today, Debbie Gammons Brown, DGB. She writes in, hey, Buster, as we move into the 2021 season, do you think the stats from 2022 will all have asterisks next to them?
I don't think that they will literally have an asterisk next to them, but I think we're all going to look back at all the 2020 numbers. You know, there's going to be some kid doing a book report in 30 years and look back and see these smaller numbers from 2020 and say, what the heck happened? It feels like not only in baseball, but everywhere, everything there was an asterisk about 2020. I just don't think we have to put the punctuation on it.
Oh, my gosh. You guys sat in your house for a year? Why?
Right. I know. Exactly. And then they're going to show the mortality toll, sadly. Yeah. It's just, I can't believe it. Over 500,000 people.
Pour a big one out. That's it for Bleacher Tweets for today. Thanks for writing in, everyone. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. And Buster, who we got to round out NL East week?
Yeah, so we just talked to Tom McCarthy today. We talked to Steve Gelbs yesterday with the Mets. Tomorrow, we've lined up with the Nationals, FP Santangelo, and Jeff Francoeur, Frenchie's going to join us to talk about the Atlanta Braves on Friday. So send along a question, all Bleacher tweeters, listeners. I will pose, as I did with Tom McCarthy today, I'll pose one of your questions to these announcers. That's it for today. My thanks to Dave, to Hembo, to Tom, to Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight podcast.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.